Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Second Take. Today, we are having a very interesting discussion on the conference finals. What happened in Minnesota? Does Indiana have any moves they can make to become a true title contender? We are also going to be breaking down the finals matchup between the Boston Celtics and the Dallas Mavericks. Who has the edge in the series? What players are the X factors? As well as what you should be looking for in the matchup. Get ready for the NBA Finals with us here at Second Take. So first off, Ryan, the first thing I want to jump into is what happened to Minnesota and what do they need to do to take the next step as a true championship team?
Yeah, so when you're looking at Minnesota, the biggest thing from the whole entire playoffs that I take away is their offensive production was really, really lacking overall in the playoffs. And when you look at it, there were times that they had some role players who were struggling. You know, McDaniels had some bad stretches. He also had some good stretches. Nickeil Alexander-Walker really struggled after the first round of the playoffs offensively, right? Mike Conley's not really a go-to scorer. And while getting a lot of those guys were key for their team and they're big for what they do on defense, one of the biggest guys you also have to look at in this series was Karl-Anthony Towns, because those guys aren't really go-to scorers in the way Towns is. And I know Minnesota ended up winning game four of that series to avoid getting swept, but Cat was awful in the first half. And then he came back with 20 points in the second half, and that was able to push them over to win. So just his lack of consistency really hurt them a lot. And I know we don't think Ant's in his prime yet, but he definitely feels like he's good enough to be the best player on the title contending team, which they are contending, but they were really kind of behind the Mavericks, just didn't play to that same level overall in the series. So for me, it's the Cat thing. And I know we talked about him being traded, and I said, you know, if they beat Denver, probably not. But at the same time, if you can't find more offense to put around that team while keeping your good defense, he might be the easiest guy on that team to move to maybe get more consistent options there.
I agree with you. So I am not going to put much blame on the supporting cast. I believe Naz Reid played incredible this playoffs. McDaniels did exactly what he was asked to do, right? The blame falls mostly on two players, one of which you're not ever going to consider trading ever, Anthony Edwards. I believe he's a year away, right? He showed inconsistency in the conference finals after exploding for the first and second rounds of the playoffs. He just ran out of gas, which is honestly inexcusable, right? You're 22 years old. You're a professional athlete. You're a freak athlete. Running out of gas shouldn't be the reason why you're not performing, right? Let's be honest here. I know we all love Anthony Edwards, but when we give him credit, he deserves it. And when he gets criticism, I believe he should deserve it as well. So he just needs to work on his stamina as well as his progression through double teams. Whenever he got blitzed, he was either just completely out of the play or too aggressive to a fault, right? He needs to find a good balance there. I believe he'll do it. He's a year away, maybe a two, from progressing into a spot where Luka looks unstoppable when you blitz him. Jokic looks unstoppable when he blitz him. That is in his future, so I'm not really too worried about that, but those are the areas he should improve. The one situation that is interesting in Minnesota is what you touched on with Karl-Anthony Towns. Okay, he showed his true colors as a super inconsistent number two option. One game or one half, he'll go 5 for 5 from the three-point line like in game four. Or he'll have a three-game stretch where he shoots 27% from the field, right? And he's a complete no-show. That is the big piece that you will not see really any improvement. Karl-Anthony Towns is who he is at this point. So that is the situation to monitor in Minnesota.
Yeah, I love how you brought up that Anthony Edwards was getting played differently than any other team, how Dallas was coming out and blitzing him, showing multiple bodies. They were really early in the series trying to make him a passer, and he was trying to pass more, but he wasn't getting up as many shots as he probably should be for what Minnesota needed him to do. And then, as you said, there were times where he flipped the switch to become too aggressive. And like you said, if you look at a guy like Luka, you can play him any way you want to, but he still does what he needs to do to be effective in that situation, with the balance of scoring and passing through that. And like you said, it'll just come with time and experience. He's only 22 years old, so he'll get there. But that has been a little bit of that inexperience, because usually when you look at teams historically who go on and win, it usually takes them a year or two in the playoffs of being there and getting that experience before they finally get there. And Minnesota made it last year. They made it to the conference finals this year. So they're progressing. They're going in the right direction, but not quite there yet. And the other problem with Cat that I see is he got in foul trouble a ton, all the time, and he has no business doing that. And maybe it's just a result of him playing the four, where defensively, like, he's not good at five necessarily, but also defensively at four, just more prone to fouling because he's on the perimeter so much.
No, I totally agree. Most of the blame does go on Karl Anthony Towns, right? Edwards gets the second most amount, and then, of course, Gobert is going to get slandered no matter what he does. And to your point, you kind of have to pick. This experiment with Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns worked perfectly for Denver.
Oh, yeah, they're built to beat Denver.
But any other team, they're going to struggle against that's legit. This series exposed their weakness. They can't go small. Or at least they were afraid to. I don't think that's a can't. It's more of a we decided not to because we're paying $400 million to two big men, right? And at this point, the interesting move or situation to monitor is probably the Karl Anthony Towns situation like we discussed. So I wanted to play a little game of deal or no deal. I will be the Minnesota GM shopping around Karl Anthony Towns. And you will play the opposing GM. Okay, so I'm going to give you an offer, and you tell me whether or not you would accept that offer. Okay, we're going to start off with the New York Knicks. Okay, I am offering Karl Anthony Towns for Julius Randle and a first-round pick.
For Julius Randle and a first-round pick, I am saying no to that because as a New York Nick as the franchise, after seeing what happened in the playoffs, I much rather have a secondary ball handler with Jalen Brunson, which Randle is much more of that than Cat is, I would say.
What if I told you Isaiah Hartenstein wasn't going to be on your team next year?
I'm still not doing it because I still have Precious Achiuwa and Mitchell Robinson who can play my five, even if I don't have the money to pay iHeart. Still not doing it for Cat, honestly. I don't think it would make the team overall any better, necessarily. Maybe similar, but not better.
That's fair. Randle does get a bad rap. Okay, we're going to move on to the other team in New York, Brooklyn. The dumpster fire that they are, I am offering you Karl Anthony Towns for Mikal Bridges straight up.
Oh, straight up for Brooklyn? You know what? If I'm Brooklyn, I'm saying no. But if you give me any type of draft capital with that whatsoever, even if it's just one first, I'm saying yes, because they need picks so bad because they have none. None of their own, at least. So
neither does Minnesota. So
yeah, exactly.
It's a game of neither team has picks to offer. Okay.
Yeah, for Minnesota, I think that's a really good trade. But for Brooklyn, I don't think Cat necessarily would fit their whole little rebuild situation down there, especially because you'd have to pay more money to Cat than you do Bridges at this point in time.
That's true. I mean, I thought that was a very interesting one. It could have worked out for both teams. I mean, Brooklyn's not going anywhere, to be honest. So it would just be a pure spice things up move.
If you think about it, too, Brooklyn kind of built the two finals teams in a way with giving Boston Tatum and Brown and then giving Kyrie to Dallas. So, you know, Brooklyn Nets fans got to feel fantastic about all the moves that they've made. And they should really trust their organization.
Blame it on the mayor. Blame it on their mayor, dude. It didn't let Kyrie play and then Harden left because of it. That's a whole nother podcast. that has been discussed over and over again. The greatest what-if team in the history of basketball. The next and final offer that I have for you as an opposing GM is Karl-Anthony Towns for Brandon Ingram and a second-round pick.
Ooh, you know what? If I'm New Orleans, I say yes to that because New Orleans already wants to move off of Brandon Ingram. In this offseason, he has 1 year left on his contract. You can move Cat back to the five. They're not going to bring back Valanciunas from all the reports I understand. So he fits a new need for your team at the center spot. Offensively, that team becomes super dynamic. They have good perimeter defenders, which you can hope. You don't have to rely too much on Zion and Cat in the background. So yeah, if I'm New Orleans, I'm doing that.
I kind of like this deal. It might, a second round pick might not get it done, but I do think if they included a first round pick, that trade probably happens. I like it from a Minnesota perspective because you get a secondary scorer on the perimeter that can create his own shot. Karl-Anthony Towns is a great stretch four that can shoot and put it on the floor a little bit, but really he's catch and shoot or a turnaround jumper. Whereas Ingram could be the secondary engine of your entire offense more consistently, right? I also believe it would work a little bit better with, you know, small ball lineups with Naz Reid potentially at your five, you know, and McDaniels at your four. You know what I mean? And you could, or at Ingram with at your four and things like that. The big concern for Minnesota is also the big concern that New Orleans has. It's the health of Brandon Ingram, right? How much he'll actually end up playing, how consistently he'll be on the floor. I think that would be an interesting trade scenario this offseason.
I also like how for Minnesota, Brandon Ingram kind of has a secondary playmaking ability. He's averaged 5+ assists the last couple of years. So not only can he score, you can also put the ball in his hands and he can move it and find guys and create for himself and others. So for Minnesota, I think it makes them more dynamic, as you mentioned, because they can still play big if they want to, putting Reed and Gobert together. But they can also play small, and they have are just adding more wings and having a little less bigs on that team, and it will open up the offense for everyone, I think, and make them better on, I think, on defense, just because even though Ingram's not known as a defender, he's still better on the perimeter than Cat is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, trade works all around. Again, a second round pick might not get it done, a first round pick might. So I think it helps because I haven't touched on the New Orleans side. It basically means you're going all in on Zion, and then you're giving him size around that can also stretch the floor.
Yeah, he needs because to play with a stretch big.
Yeah, he needs as much spacing as possible. So if you can get your big out of the paint, it just unlocks Zion even more. Not that Brandon Ingram clogs the paint, but their current five in Valanciunas, I believe that's who it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it Vucevic?
No, Valanciunas. He's an okay shooter, but he's nothing crazy.
Nothing crazy. So Cat really does open up the floor a little bit. And then you also give Herb Jones and Trey Murphy more time. I'm really high on those guys. So it's kind of addition by subtraction for those players as well. Yeah. So I like the move all around.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the most beneficial of the three trades for both sides. I could see how both sides benefit from this.
Well, speaking about moves, the Dallas All-Star Break trade deadline moves that they made might just be the most underrated in the history of basketball, okay? Since the All-Star Break, Dallas has had one of the best records in the NBA, 16-2 when their starters are playing. Washington has found the perfect role as the third option for Dallas. 3-and-D, just corner. He's like a P.J. Tucker on steroids. That's what I like to look at him as. And then Gafford has shocked me. Honestly, he played on the Wizards, right, beforehand. So nobody watched him play, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like the bruiser bully big to Lively's athletic rim running big. It's the perfect kind of 1-2 punch that you can throw at opponents. And then, of course, the renaissance that Kyrie has now blossomed into is an exciting thing for all basketball fans. So the fact that they made the finals because of these moves, I don't think they were going anywhere without these moves, makes this, in my opinion, the most underrated in the history of basketball. But there are some other recent trade deadlines that I kind of want to compare it to. The first one is Marc Gasol gets traded to the Raptors for CJ Miles, Valanciunas, and DeLon Wright. We all know what happened. Raptors ended up winning the finals. And then Andrew Wiggins and picks goes to the Warriors for D'Angelo Russell. Let's talk about a terrible trade for Minnesota.
Yeah.
But in your opinion, where does this Dallas trade deadline rank amongst other notable ones in the history of in recent history?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I touch on that, I do want to bring up one point. I do think role players now have become so vital in the NBA that so many teams, like, because so many teams have that top end talent, like they have two or three guys who are really good at top, that this makes the trade deadline so much more important for what looks like small moves, but they end up mattering a lot. Because they're in this playoffs, we've seen a lot of teams who don't have the depth, they don't have the role players that are needed for their teams to advance, right? Dallas, it took this the two trades that they made, it took them from being a play-in team, who that's probably all they were, to an NBA Finals team. So first of all, that is one of the best trade deadline moves ever, mostly because of team fit. It's got to be one of the best ever because of team fit. Because a lot of teams, there are trades that are made and there's just a lot of big names. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But they're not made for fit. They're just adding more and more and more talent overall to the team. PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford fit Luka and Kyrie perfectly. They gave them that front court defense, which is what they badly needed because they didn't really have that. And they also got even bigger because before they were playing Grant Williams, who's like 6'4", power forward, who supposed to be able to shoot, but he can't really shoot when he's not open. So it's like, you know, and then we saw what PJ Washington can do and when you leave him open against OKC. So it's just like, this was so smart by the Dallas front office because they did it for fit, which, like I said, in today's NBA matters so much more than just talent acquisition, being that almost everyone has an elite top two. Almost everyone.
It's true. Anyone that's in the playoffs. I mean, the perfect example of what you're saying is what Phoenix did last year.
Oh, man.
Phoenix traded the entire mortgage, the boat, the car, you know, and the second wife.
Opened a new line Durant. Of credit.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For Kevin Durant. And they weren't in that desperate of a situation. I'd argue Dallas was in a much worse situation, being that they didn't even make the playoffs the year before. And they were kind of looking at like an eighth, ninth play-in spot this year. Right? All that, they didn't overreact. They didn't try to swing for some big ungruntled, you know, superstar and trade everyone that had any sort of value. They made a simple move for PJ Washington and Gafford. And that completely transformed their team. I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. doesn't even play anymore.
Nope.
Dante Exum, who had a sudden resurgence in the middle of the season, doesn't even play anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Derek Jones is having a fantastic playoffs as well. But this is a perfect example of how simple but smart moves at the deadline can take a team from average to top tier. So that's why I argue this is one of the most underrated trade deadline acquisitions in the history of basketball, because nobody had any hopes for Dallas even after they made these trades. And now they're in the NBA Finals.
Absolutely. And if you look at Dallas, I don't know exactly where they were ranking before the trade deadline, but their defense wasn't that impressive, right? It wasn't that good. It was probably, I think it was late teens where they were ranking. But after the trade deadline, they were a top five defense for the rest of the season, and that has carried over to the playoffs. So that's been another thing, because they can give the ball to Luka, Kyrie, say, hey, go score, lead us on offense. And we got you guys. We got a lob threat. We got a corner three-point shooter, and they're big bodies who can defend. And just like you said, it just completely transformed their team, and they fit the play style they already wanted to play.
So we will see if this ends up turning into a championship. If it does, I will go ahead and say that it's the greatest trade deadline move ever because of how simple it was, right? It's very reminiscent of the Marc Gasol to the Raptors trade, you know, where he was just the missing piece, the playmaking five around that Raptors team that made them very difficult to beat, right? Or even the Wiggins trade back when he actually played good basketball, you know, for the Warriors.
Well, so, now that we know what D'Lo is too, so.
Oh, yeah. That was a fleece. Mm-hmm. They got picks too. I mean, yep. that was a fleece. So, but speaking of teams that might need to make moves, were you looking at Indiana? Swept 4-0 after Tyrese Haliburton went down early in the series. What are your just thoughts on Indiana? Are there any moves that they could possibly make to take that next step? Where do you think, how do you feel about where they're at?
Yeah, so two main things that I think about with this Indiana team. A, they had a pretty easy path to the conference finals. Let's be honest. Milwaukee, no Giannis, missed a lot of Dame. They took care of business. New York, just bodies going down all over the place. Of course, in the last game, Brunson broke his hand. What happened to New York this season? They indeed took care of business there, right? So the good thing was they did take care of business. Made the Eastern Conference Finals. Definitely showed that they were not as good as Boston, not on that level that Boston is, and they weren't able to advance anymore. Competitive games, yes, but unable to pull out the wins. But the good thing is for Indiana, they have a ton of flexibility. So they have a lot of things that they could do. And in the offseason, priority one is re-signing Pascal Siakam. He's very good for them in the playoffs. He fits really well with that roster, what they like to do. And then they have a bunch of young players and role players who are on fantastic contracts right now is the other thing. If I'm Indiana, though, kind of like you mentioned with Dallas, I'm not going to overreact and go all in for the biggest name I can get because that can mess them up. They can lose their draft capital, that flexibility. They can lose their contract flexibility. They need to get the right players to come in who fit that team. And honestly, if you're looking at that roster, I think they need a guy who can just close games for them. A guy who could be clutch or get his own at the end of the game. Because Siakam, you know, he's okay, but he's not like that go-getter at the end. Tyrese Haliburton hasn't shown so far that he's that go-getter at the end. He much rather facilitate, you know. Sometimes he doesn't step up and take the shots that he needs to take. But yeah, so if I'm Indiana, you know, just looking to add maybe some defense, hopefully an offensive closer for that team who can just go get his, because their concepts is very like pickup style, like go with the flow, like screen and cut kind of deal. But they need a guy who can go get his own and, you know, let your young players develop, let them get better. But at the same time, like I said, they do need to get better and they shouldn't be just content with keeping their roster the same, but they shouldn't also overreact and overpay for the first name that is available. Like, for example, I don't think Brandon Ingram, like he might be a guy they could go get, honestly, because he is a closer, but you don't want to overpay for a guy like that just because you do have so much on your team right now and you're so young.
I agree. I agree with everything you've said. First off, they did overachieve. Kinda. They lucked into it with all of the injuries to the opponents that they played. New York, for crying out loud, almost beat them with Brunson and four reserves because of all the injuries that happened to them. And then, of course, no Giannis in the first round. I love your point about not overpaying, not pressing the panic button. It's not really the panic button, but not throwing all your chips on the table and then mortgaging your future, because this team is very young. Let's be honest. The two things that I learned from this postseason run from Indiana is Siakam is a dog. It's a wonderful trade. As you said, priority number one is to re-sign him. And then the second thing, and this would probably cover up many of the mistakes that Indiana had, is Haliburton has a lot of room to grow. Mm-hmm. The lack of aggression at times from Halliburton was frustrating. He would pass up open layups to get other guys involved. He needs to really kind of develop the, okay, it's time for me to go score, right? I don't think he has that idea of when the team needs him to step up in that position, because he's so, okay, let's get everybody involved. He's very much like Jason Kidd-esque, where he just wants to get people involved. He matters more about getting assists than scoring. But he's so talented offensively, especially with his three-point shooting ability, that it was frustrating watching some of these games where he just would be very passive. One game he'd score 8 points against the Knicks, the other game he'd score 30. I think the only game where he kind of sort of figured that out was game one before he got injured against Boston. Mm-hmm. I really loved how he played that game. Yes, he dribbled it off his knee, whatever. But the more he grows into the, okay, I'm going to score 26 to 30 points a game and then also give you 11 assists instead of, you know, having halves of playoff games where he just isn't aggressive at all. He needs to be aggressive. That's the biggest thing with Halliburton. And then a closer, like you said, I mean, the rumor, it's not really a rumor, but I really would love a Paul George dude on this team. The only problem with that is you might have to pay him too much to where you'd have to let go of some other dudes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that would work. You wouldn't have to trade for him because he's a free agent. But I do like that fit, a Paul George-esque player that could get his own shot in crunch time.
Yeah, and that's why I think if you can get Brandon Ingram for the right price, that could work. They would be taking another gamble because, like, Siakam only had 1 year left on his deal this offseason. Brandon Ingram, he only has 1 year left on his deal for next season. But the biggest thing, at least for their internal development, if they do keep the same roster together, at least through the offseason, is Tyrese Halliburton, like you said. Because if he wanted to, he could have averaged 25, 26 points per game this season, and he averaged 20. Like, he has more talent than what he does. And like you said, like, he's a point guard by nature, essentially, is what you've described, which is true. And it's a good thing. You want that. But at the same time, part of being that point guard is realizing what you are, what your capabilities are, and what your team needs in that moment. Because sometimes it has to be me time. Sometimes. I know a lot of people get made fun of for that, but sometimes it's just the case with these stars. And that is something that he can hopefully look to develop. And if not, he's never going to be more than a number two guy.
No, I agree. I think he's got number one potential. It all just comes down to adjusting slightly how he attacks the game, right? If he developed a little bit more Luka and a little less Kidd, Jason Kidd, that would be the perfect balance of Halliburton, because he can shoot the lights out. And because he's such a threat from deep, he can get to the rim, right? Just a little bit more. That's all I'm asking for. So, speaking of a player that might need to just give a little bit more to silence the haters is Jason Tatum. Okay. Ever since the 2022 finals, Tatum has seemed to fold in the biggest moments, right? I believe that it's mostly due to his shot selection. Okay. Overall, Tatum settles too much for step back or pull up threes and mid-range turnaround jumpers. Okay. He's only shooting 29% from three this postseason. And I truly believe that the next level for Tatum is to make the game easier. He's 6'11, 260 pounds. Simmer down on the step backs, okay? What the hell are you doing? Just take easier shots, less dribble pull-up threes, less KD, more Braun, okay? You're a freight train. I think that is what Tatum needs to do to finally silence all the noise around his name. Because to be honest, he's had a crazy successful career. He's always in the conference finals, and he wins all the time. It really is make the game easier, in my opinion. But what do you think Tatum needs to do in the finals to really just silence the noise around his name.
Oh, I think you hit this perfectly, because I think his overall play in the playoffs has been over-criticized, because if you look at it, he plays well in the playoffs overall, but like you said, it's those big moments, late-game situations, maybe closeout games where he just doesn't play as good in those situations, but he's always been successful, and they've done it multiple times, so he's obviously part of that reason why they're successful, but like you said, he shoots hard shots. Like, but the hard shots are the easiest ones to get. So it does feel like he settles a lot, as you mentioned, when he has size. Even though he's like a small forward per se, he's bigger than most of the fours that are playing in today's NBA. I mean, he's at least 6'10", and he's built, he's big, he's strong. And it's like you said, he can get to the basket way more than he does. And you know, maybe part of that is as the coach just getting him the ball closer to the basket, especially against mismatches. You know, maybe you actually do bring back a little low post play for Tatum just to get him the ball that close and give him options and opportunities. But in this finals, the only way for him to really fix his reputation as like the guy and on track to be one of the dudes in NBA history is for him to probably win finals MVP. And to do that, he's going to have to be the best offensive player on that team. You know, he already passes the ball well. He gets like 5 assists a game, you know, the last couple of years in his career. But and he just needs to be more aggressive going to the basket. I mean, Dallas has a lot of good wing defenders. So if he just wants to go shoot step back threes over Derrick Jones Jr., over PJ Washington, like even if he gets a guy like Gafford or Lively switched out on him, don't shoot over them. Go take them to the rim, take them to the basket. He can handle the ball. So I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, you hit it perfectly, like what he needs to do and why people are so frustrated with his play.
I agree. I think he's over-criticized. He's still a top 10 player in the NBA, arguably a top 5, right? He's never going to be the best player in the league. I think I've accepted that fact. But just settle for less difficult shots. There's no reason to. And I do believe part of that is Mazzulla. I think he's one of the most overrated, if not the most overrated coach in the NBA. I don't think he's that great, to be honest. But Tatum needs to, whether it's a mix between adjustment to system, adjustment to coaching, or, you know, him actually deciding, hey, I'm not going to do a dribble pull-up three when I haven't touched the ball 6 possessions in a row, right? Attack the rim more, man. Get to the free throw line more. A little bit more Bron, right?
Yeah.
He seems to play a lot like Kevin Durant's a bad example, because I still think Kevin Durant shoots easier shots than him. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a Kobe Bryant in today's NBA.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? Kobe Bryant was an anomaly. He would shoot the most insane, especially later in his career when he got real comfortable with the jump shot. He would shoot this over 2 contest, double pump, over the backboard, you know, and it was Kobe. So you couldn't really get mad. He already won 5 championships. Tatum, you haven't won 5 championships doing that. Mm-hmm. I hate to break it to you. And you're not as good at a turnaround double contested shot as Kobe Bryant was. You don't need to be, because you're 4 inches taller and 40 pounds heavier. Okay. I think he just needs to put more rim pressure, as we said. But
yeah. I think you also, the other thing with Kobe was a lot of people forget about that because of his late game play and his late game prowess of how clutch, and he would show up in the big moments, which Tatum doesn't seem to do, which is really the biggest difference, I think, between those two play styles, is we would forget about it if he was still super aggressive, kept at it at the end of the game. And that's been everyone's biggest criticism with Boston, is when the game's close or when it comes to the end of the game, they usually play fast, they're flowing, they're passing, they're moving. But at the end of the game, they're like, okay, we're just going to go ISO and hold the ball, and then there's no movement, like, nothing's really happening. They're just holding on to the ball. And then, oh, Tatum, I'm going to hold the ball for 20 seconds, sidestep 3. Like, that's when they have most of their problems. And that's why they're so hard to trust, because their late game execution has really been lacking the last 2 years.
No, I totally agree. And it all goes back to the 2022 finals. Tatum wasn't even the fourth best player on the court during that series. Brown outplayed him. Wiggins outplayed him. And, of course, Curry had a hell of a series. But this is his chance. This is his chance to finally silence the noise around his name. Some of it warranted, some of it not so much. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of which, the NBA Finals are set. Dallas versus Boston. Who would have saw that coming? And we all knew Boston was going to make it. Who the hell saw Dallas making it? We are now going to dive into the X factors, things to watch, as well as our prediction on the series. Ryan, before we get into all that, we have a very intriguing matchup of number twos. Kyrie Irving versus Jaylen Brown. Who do you believe is going to have a better series?
For this series, I'm going to bet on Kyrie. Jaylen Brown was the best player in the finals for the Celtics when they lost to Golden State. He was the best player in the Eastern Conference Finals when the Celtics beat Indiana. But Kyrie is clutch, and he always, always rises to the moment. I mean, he only has lost one closeout game so far in his career. We'll see, how that holds up going forward. But he has that it factor you always look for in players, but like that special it factor. Not that Jaylen Brown isn't a playoff riser, because I think he is. He plays well in the playoffs. But Kyrie has also hit one of the biggest shots in NBA Finals history. Jaylen Brown did have a big one against Indiana in the conference finals, but I like Kyrie a bit better just because I don't think Dallas is as talented as the Boston Celtics overall. So Kyrie has to be even better and show up even more for his team if they want to have a chance to win that series. So I just think he'll be given more opportunity because he only really has to share the ball with Luka, whereas Jaylen Brown has Tatum, Porzingis, Holiday, Derek White. So I'm looking at Kyrie to have a bigger series than Jaylen Brown.
I agree with that take. I think Kyrie's going to be more aggressive and he's going to have more responsibility. But I kind of want to lean towards Brown because it's going to be a tad bit easier for him to do so. The talent discrepancy of these two teams is kind of glaring. Boston has the most talent in the NBA, 1 through 6. You know what I mean? But Kyrie is a better player than Brown. In order for Dallas to have a chance, we need to see 2016 Kyrie. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he might just do it. So I have no idea here. That's why I asked you the question. But either way, I think that's going to be a super intriguing matchup of number twos. Who do you have as your X factors going into the series?
Yeah, so the main X factors I was thinking of that's going to make the biggest differences in the series are I don't have like one specific player for this team, but the Mavs role players to me are going to be vital for this team. In the playoffs, their third and fourth leading scorers are PJ Washington at 14 points per game and Dennis Jones Jr. with 10 points per game in the playoffs. So they only have four guys who are really getting double figures for this team, three who are doing it consistently.
And I mean, it helps when two of those dudes average 30.
Exactly. So. And look, Dallas, I think, will need more scoring production outside of Luka and Kyrie. Because in the Minnesota series, they're both phenomenal, awesome. Almost 30 points in every single game. But I don't think, because they have those two stars, but I doubt they get 30 in every game against Boston. Right, Boston, I do think their guards, like their initial guards in Holiday and White, are a better backcourt defensively than Conley and Edwards, mostly because Conley's older and smaller and Edwards has a bigger load to carry on offense. But they're going to need a big game from one or two of those role players, a couple of big games, or just a really good, consistent group effort with multiple guys playing well. Like, they can't have those nights where Luka and Kyrie absolutely go off for 30, 35 points, but then their role players combined shoot like 5 of 20 from 3. They can't have that. Boston has too much firepower, and the Mavs won't completely shut down all of those guys on the Celtics. It's just not doable. So I think the Mavs role players are going to be the X factor in this series.
I completely agree. And to touch on that, Derek Lively, needs to be healthy and ready to go. Right. Mm-hmm. That injury in game three, whether it's a concussion or a neck strain or whatever, he needs to be good to go because he really helps the Dallas's defense as well as the vertical lob threat that he is. Luka, him and Luka have something, some sort of magic. It seems like Luka would jump up, get contested, last moment just throw it up 12 feet in the air and Lively just goes and dunks it. Right. So speaking to Dallas roles players, I completely agree. Can't all be on Luka and Kyrie, or they're going to lose this series in four or five. Mm-hmm. So they're going to need a big PJ Washington game. They're going to need a big Gafford game. You know what I mean? Those role players collectively need to make up the difference because talent-wise, it's not so close in my opinion. But my X factor for this series, and it really heavily sways who I'm going with, is Kristaps Porzingis. Okay? Rumor has it he's probably going to play. But how good is he going to be? Because at this point in his in Al Horford's career, I don't think you can expect to keep getting this type of production. All right. They have faced inferior opponents with bigs that are semi-questionable. Mm-hmm. It's going to come down to whether Porzingis is good to go because we haven't seen a fully healthy Boston team. And I think if Porzingis is good to go with his ability to spread the floor and stretch Dallas's defense, I think it's a wrap. Mm-hmm. If he's not good to go, we might have a different discussion. So it really comes down to how healthy and how ready Porzingis is for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we were going to talk about this a little later, but kind of transitions well at the moment. One of my things to watch, or my main thing was to watch, was the Porzingis calf injury. So like you said, he was your X factor. His injury is my thing to watch because, like you said, optimism that he'll be back for game one. But if you look at this playoffs, other notable players with calf injuries specifically are Giannis and Jamal Murray. Giannis didn't even play in that playoff series. Jamal Murray had some good moments, but he wasn't the same kind of guy in the playoffs. So if Porzingis has the Jamal Murray effect and he's not himself because of the calf injury, that's really going to matter for them. And Porzingis, like you said, he's more important to Boston in this series than any of the other series, due to mostly like his rim protection and his ability to stretch. Because Horford is solid, but he's older now, right? Not as athletic anymore to go against Lively and Gafford for Dallas. And Porzingis, as you mentioned, his ability to stretch, he's also a much higher volume shooter than Horford is. Shoots way more threes. So the Dallas Mavericks are going to have to come out so much further to create more space offensively for Boston overall.
Completely agree. That's why it was my X factor, right? Mm-hmm. My thing to watch is simply how Tatum approaches the series. We kind of talked about it in the previous segment, but he needs to stop taking inefficient shots, right? Playing the best version that he can will shut the door on Dallas's chance here because they have that much more talent, in my opinion. Right. We all know that Luka is the guy in this series, mm-hmm. but Tatum needs to be the second best player in order for them to win. If Kyrie outplays Tatum, it's over for Boston. Okay. That is my thing to watch. How will he approach it? Is he going to put pressure on the rim? Is he going to get Lively and Gafford in foul trouble? Right. Is he going to get Luka tired? Is he going to attack Luka in switches? Is he going to settle for step-back mid-range turnaround jumpers? Right? That is my thing to watch because it's not only I want him to shut up the haters mm-hmm. because I think he's very undervalued as of late. But if he gets outplayed by Kyrie, we're having a totally different discussion.
I think that's a really good one to bring up because the worst case scenario for Boston is that Dallas has the two best players in the series in Luka and Kyrie, and their role players are good. Like they perform well. They don't have to be special or spectacular, but they're good and they have a guy who has a game or two, right? As we've discussed here or there. That is the worst case scenario for Boston. And Tatum, at least being the second best player in the series, is preventing that, because we know how special Kyrie can be. But we also know how special Tatum can be. And so, you know, if Tatum's going and at least matching that kind of production and being close to Luka and a little better than Kyrie, that Boston, with the amount of talent they have, they're probably going to be okay. And they're going to be fine. But yeah, if Dallas has the two best players in the series with good role player play, that's the best case scenario for Dallas to win this series.
I completely agree, right? If he pulls a 2022 NBA Finals, Luka and Kyrie can beat this team.
Mm-hmm.
So those are our things to watch. We're going to dive right into it. Who do you got in this series, Boston or Dallas?
I am going with Boston in this series. Kind of surprised I didn't think I'd feel this way all season long until now that we're here. But Boston is the most talented team in the NBA. Well, the Mavs, you know, have had a top five defense since the trade deadline. I don't know if they can stop Tatum, Brown, Porzingis, White, and Holiday. And as we mentioned, Dallas role players need to step up, maybe have a night to shine. And Luka and Kyrie have to be even better than they were against the Timberwolves, I think, to be able to beat Boston. And, you know, the only way Boston really loses is if, you know, Tatum kind of has a stinker finals, and if they just show up and they don't try, like we've seen them have a game or two with their lapses in effort, or even if they struggle with their late game execution. But I do think Boston is going to get over that. I think adding Porzingis will make a big difference. And honestly, I don't know if every game in the series will be that close either, honestly. So I'm going with Boston.
I can't hate that pick, right? I mean, my heart wants to go with Dallas, right? It has this whole postseason. I called them making it to the conference finals early in the playoffs, before they even began. For me, it really comes down to Porzingis' health. If he's good to go, there's no question, right? But I don't know if he's good to go, so I'm going to stick with what I want to happen. Give me Dallas. Yes, Boston is the better team. Boston has destroyed everyone in their path. I know Boston won 64 games to Dallas's 50. But sometimes you just got to stick with the team that has nothing to lose. Okay. There is no pressure on Dallas whatsoever. Nobody thought they were going to be here. Nobody thought they were going to make it out of the first or second round of the playoffs. Boston has all of the expectations on them. This reminds me a lot like the 2011 Dallas Mavericks. Nobody thought they were going to be there. Nobody thought they should have been there. And they're playing against a team that has a lot more talent. Well, you know what happened? J.J. Barea beat them. Okay? So playing against this Boston team, I expect Luka and Kyrie to hoop like crazy. A 2016 LeBron and Kyrie-esque performance. And with Porzingis in question, as of right now, I'm going to go with Dallas. Now, if Porzingis comes out and gives you 80% of what he was able to do this season, it's a wrap, probably. I don't know if that's happening. So give me Dallas. Give me the underdog. Give me the team that I'm going to be rooting for. Okay? Give me Dallas.
Yeah, and you know what? You might be the smarter one in this scenario, because all playoffs, I've been picking teams based on assuming guys have been healthy. And they've never came out and been healthy, not once when I thought that it would be the case. So, you know, we'll see what happens here. I really do feel good about Porzingis, though, coming back, just because I think he could have came back late in the Eastern Conference Finals, but they just didn't need him to. So, hey, let's get him some more rest, get him some more rest days off, just so we can really make sure he's good to go. And just for, honestly, the entertainment's sake, I hope everyone for both teams is able to come back and play, including Lively, just because I think it will give us the best possible product. And, you know, a lot of injuries have happened in this playoff, a lot of series have been won because the team has been hurt, and I would just like to see one be like straight up head to head, like our full team versus your full team.
I agree with that, because much of the playoffs has been determined by injury, especially on the Eastern Conference side of things. Mm-hmm. So I am asking for a healthy and competitive finals. I don't want no sweep. I don't want no gentleman sweep. I want it to go at least 6 or 7. You know, I want a drama filled finals. I feel like we haven't gotten that since, I guess you could go back to when Giannis won.
Yeah. They went down 2-0.
You know, they were down 2-0, and then Giannis decided to say, I'm better than everyone else. Screw you. But I really am craving a 2016, you know, a 2013, you know, 2010 NBA Finals.
We want some big moments.
It's going seven. You don't know what's going to happen. And who knows? That was our episode. Thanks for tuning in to Second Take. And we will see you again halfway through the finals.